You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I am your host today, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox. As each week, we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Both Alan and I address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, being healthier in your family, and so much more. With each of us having over 30 years experience working with families in crisis, we have both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring to you Answers for the Family. Now today we are going to be talking about the Purple Project. And our guest today is Chris Heron. Now, his story is just phenomenal anyway, but we'll talk more about him in just a moment. But Chris has struggled with substance abuse for much of his basketball career, and drug-free and alcohol-free since August 1st, 2008, Chris has refocused his life to put his sobriety and family above all else. And in June 2009, he launched Hoop Dreams with Chris Heron, a basketball player development company that offers basketball training, camps, and clinics to top professional prospects in the New England area. Now, off the court, Chris Heron continues to share his story with audiences and hoping to reach just one person, making a difference in his or her life. In inspiring presentation, he draws on his own history to convince audiences that it's never too late to follow your dreams and urges audience members to overcome their own setbacks and start making right choices. Now, the topic today is the Purple Project, Stand Up to Substance Abuse. And our guest today is Chris Heron. Welcome to Answers for the Family.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well,
great to be on.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you're taking some time out. I know you have a very hectic and very busy schedule. You go all over the world and all over the country talking about the Purple Project. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. Project Purple is something, after speaking in front of hundreds of thousands of teenage kids, high school kids, middle school kids, I saw the need to create a sober culture within schools.
Mm-hmm.
I saw kids struggling to stay out of the struggle. Kids would walk up to me and say, I can't have fun. People won't hang out with me unless I get high or I get drunk. And as a former athlete who wore different colors for different organizations and charities, more specifically pink for breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
I was in the middle of trying to figure out a color for recovery and for kids. And I was speaking at a school, and a girl at the end of my presentation announced that she was a sober student, and she was sitting with her four friends who were all sober students, and they had on solid purple t-shirts, and I looked at her with such courage and admiration for saying that during my presentation. And as I was going up to give her a hug, kids, the whole school started laughing at her, and she sat down and started crying, and I looked at those kids laugh, and I said, shame on you. Every one of you should be ashamed of yourself. And I looked back at that little girl, and I said, I wish I never had to change myself, honey. I wish I never had to put a substance in my body to feel like somebody different. I wish I never followed the kids that made me feel alcohol and drugs were necessary in order to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And from that day forward, I said, I'm gonna stop Project Purple. And I was on the Purple team. So Project Purple came from one little girl's courage standing up saying she was a sober student. And this year we had 120,000 kids, wear purple to school on April 24th. And we had colleges all across the country open up chapters and wear purple during sporting events. And, this year Virginia Tech, change their uniforms purple. It was the first time any school had ever changed their uniforms for a substance abuse related foundation. Wow. And now the Kansas City Royals with Major League Baseball have jumped on board and are going to wear purple hats this year. And you know, hopefully this will inspire kids to see within themselves that they're worth more than, you know, smoking blunts and popping pills.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's a wonderful story. But what I really like, too, is you as an adult stood up and told shame on you to those other kids. Because there's so many adults that stand by and allow other kids to bully or pick on kids. It just surprises me. I'm in the schools and I see teachers stand by while this is going on. And I feel like I'm the only one that steps up. So bravo to you for standing up and letting her know there is no shame in and acknowledging that you are drug-free and you choose that life.
I mean, it takes, you know, for me, you know, and I tried to explain this to kids during my presentation that, you know, when I was in high school and the kids that used to come to the parties with water and drink water all night, and I'd be, and my friends and myself would be drinking all night, and I said by the end of the night, I would be looking across the room, seeing the kids in the water, with the water, and I would truly look within myself and say there's something inside those kids that I don't have. You know, there's something in them that I'm missing. Mm-hmm. You know, how can they be here just as themselves, and how come I'm not okay to be myself? And I want that to be clear amongst our children and our kids in school. You know, that, you know, at 32 years old when I got sober, I've taken great pride every single day at always being me. Mm-hmm. Always being me. And that's what I tried to convey to the kids. But bullying is a huge issue. Self-harm is a huge issue, mm-hmm. You know, with kids burning and cutting. And that's why, you know, I think when I go in, you know, superintendents or mayors or principals will say to me, you know, the athletes are very excited that you're coming today to speak at our school. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you sit tight. And at the end of the presentation, you'll see the kids with blue hair and piercings and the cutters. They'll be up front as well. And that's the beauty in this, because struggle. Mm-hmm. And kids can identify with that as long as you're willing to put it out there, and be transparent and honest. And they can identify with that. And that's what Project Purple is all about. And, you know, hopefully someday, you know, Susan Coleman with Breast Cancer is a beautiful foundation, and it's worth, you know, $500 million. And hopefully someday Project Purple can be the same, helping kids fight through the substance abuse. You know, it's the big thing with me is I think the disservice that's been done to our children is we don't teach enough within our school system on the topic. Mm-hmm. And B, our children think of drug addicts on their last day. You know, if I go into a school and I say, go back to class and draw me a picture of what you believe could be a drug addict, you know, 90% of my pitches are homeless people or prostitutes. You know, it's not kids with backpacks on. Mm-hmm. It's not professional athletes with uniforms. You know, our children think of drug addiction on the last day, at the worst moment. Mm-hmm. They need to understand that we all start off with backpacks, sitting in seats, listening to drug presentation.
Right. And I see it so much. I'm in a junior high school right now, and there's so much drug use in the junior high, and it's so difficult to reach them. And that's what I really like about your program, about going out and speaking. You do, how many presentations a year do you think you do? I know you're on the road all the time.
I probably do anywhere between 20 to 30 a month.
Wow. That's almost one a day.
Yeah. Yes, definitely one a day. I mean, there's months that I do more than that, but you know, I'd say on an average about 20 to 30 a month.
Right. Now, when you first got started, I mean, you went through your own sobriety. You were a basketball player, professional basketball mm-hmm. player, and then you started using drugs and alcohol. I'm not sure when that started in your life, but then you went on to write this book, Basketball Junkie, which was a tremendous outpouring of your experiences on and off the court. Can you share a little bit about some of the events that took place that made you decide to quit drugs and get clean for good and help put you on that path to help others?
Of course. You know, I was 22 years old. I had just got traded to the Celtics, my hometown team. You know, it was a storybook ending or beginning, I should say. And I took a little yellow pill in 1999 that they called OxyContin. And in 1999, I had never heard of OxyContin. Mm-hmm. I took a 40 milligram pill, and within a year, I was taking 1,600 milligrams a day. I was spending $25,000 a month. And within 2 years from that $20 I spent on that little yellow pill, within 2 years, I had switched over to heroin and using, you know, hypodermic needles to get high. That went on for about 8 years.
Were you playing basketball during that time too and doing that double life? Okay.
Yes. Yep. I was living a double life. People often say, you know, you're a professional basketball player, and that's where basketball junkie came from, because I said I was a basketball player 2 hours a day, and I was a junkie for 22 hours, you know, because my life was consumed the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, I was worried about the next day and covering up yesterday. And so I went on for about 8 years in the world of heroin, and I had been, you know, overdosed many times, and this last time I crashed my car while shooting up, overdosed, crashed into a side of a cemetery fence, and the EMTs came, and they brought me back to life, and I went into the hospital in handcuffs and shackles. Mm-hmm. And the police officer gave me a summons, and as I was walking out, I said, I'm going to kill myself today. I was 32 years old, and a nurse chased me out and convinced me to come back. She told me she went to high school with my mom, and my mom had been passed away now for about 5 years at the time, and told me that my mom was talking to her, telling her to give me a chance and make some phone calls, and she did. And I went away. I was in treatment for 30 days. I felt good, and my wife went into labor. So I asked my counselor if I could go home. He advised against it. I went forward with it. I was home 4 hours later. My son Drew was born. And I was getting high an hour after that. So after 30 days being found overdose on the side of the road, I walked in to see my son Drew come into this world. And I was getting high hours later. And when I came back to the hospital, my wife looked at me and she said, "Don't ever come back," you know? And she said, "This was it." She said, I had broken her heart a million times, and it was the last time I was going to break my kid's heart. And I went back to that center, and when I walked in, a counselor pulled me aside and said, "Come be in my office at 10 o'clock tonight." And I said, "For what?" He said, "To fix what you just wrecked at home." And I said, "There's no fixing. I lost my family." And he said, "Just come in my office at 10. You need to do a couple of things." And when I walked in, he flipped me his phone, and he said, "Now you're going to flip my phone open, and you're going to call your wife, and you're going to promise her you'll disappear. Promise her you'll never contact her again, and tell your wife and tell your kid today that their dad, when he left the hospital, he died in a car accident." And he looked me dead in the eye, and he says, "You're better off dead, Chris, for these kids. You're going to play dead, and you're going to let your kids live." And unfortunately, at 32 years old, that made a whole lot of sense to me, you know? And I looked at the clock. It was 10 o'clock. I said, "I'll be in your office at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning." I went back to my room. I hit my knees, and I started praying. I've been sober since.
Wow. Such a miraculous, you know, change of heart and change of perspective and change of your life. And I really recommend people going out and getting the book, Basketball Junkie. Where can they find that book?
Oh, I believe it's all over. I mean, Amazon and Barnes & Nobles. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can get it online. You can download it onto Kindle and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. I'm not a big promoter. I don't go on radio shows to talk about the book. You know, that's not my style.
Oh, I know, but I wanted to make sure we mentioned it, because I think it's a really important book, and I think it's a great book for maybe teenagers that are starting to head down that path, and maybe through learning about your experiences, they can make some better choices for themselves. Now, I know to support your whole vision of helping others, you founded the Heron Project. It's a nonprofit organization. And yeah. it's dedicated to providing assistance to families affected by addiction. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, when I first got sober and started making a little extra money, I would put some aside, and when people would call me, I would call treatment centers and say, you know, they don't have any money, but I have this. Will you please take them in? Mm-hmm. And treatment centers would work with me, and we would I would put a couple of people in treatment. And then I said, why not raise money and help families who can't really help themselves right now? And help addicts who can't help themselves, but help families who are struggling with the financial ruin that their loved one has put them through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we started picking up where people, you know, can't afford. And we started paying for people to go away to treatment. And that's what it's all about. You know, and Project Purple's part of that. You know, it's all about, I don't know many families who, you know, they have an account, a college fund, but they don't have a rehab fund. Mm-hmm. They don't have a treatment fund for their kids. And I don't know many families that can afford $30,000 a month.
Right.
You know, and you always don't get it the first time. So, you know, really, if you really want to look at it with an honest outlook, you know, you're looking at maybe $90,000, mm-hmm. you know, or $120,000 to get your loved one treatment before they turn it around. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's my big thing. I think addicts need to be treated fairly. Mm-hmm. They need to be looked upon as an illness and treated as such. And hopefully someday that will turn around.
Right.
And hopefully, you know, one thing in the addiction world, I believe, and I don't say this with any insult, but, you know, they claim that there's 30 million people that suffer from addiction, or 25 million people. And if you tag their family into that, you're looking at 75 million.
Right.
And if there's 75 million people affected by substance abuse, you know, is a very quiet group of people. If 75 million people stood up and said no more, then maybe drug addicts and alcoholics would be worth more than 5 days or 7 days in a detox center.
That would be
you
nice.
Know, and maybe.
Whoops! Somehow I you dropped out a moment.
No,
nope. There you go.
Yeah. No, I think that maybe someday we'll be worth more than 5 to 7 days in a detox center.
Well,
you know, because that's basically our value right now.
Well, according to the insurance companies, you're lucky. I know plenty of parents are struggling to get their kids or their 18, 19, 20-year-old into treatment, and they just can't afford. They put up their houses, they put up everything, and as you know, it's more than a week or a month in order to get into recovery and into sobriety. And it takes the willingness of the person wanting to make that change for you. It was the birth of your son, losing your family, and not having a part of their life, or to get sober and be part of their life. And I know we only have a couple more minutes with you because you do have such a busy schedule. I have a couple listener comments and questions. One was that as a Bostonian, I was a huge fan of the Celtics during the time you were on the team. And I remember the story in 2001 when your arrest occurred. And I'm so happy to hear you're doing well now. And then another comment was, a high school counselor in California, I had not heard about your book or work until I read about it on the Answers for the Family website. You've become a real hero that is making a difference in lives of kids, and I'll be picking up a copy of your book and sharing the Purple Project with our principal and others in our community, and I applaud you for the incredible work you are doing. And so those are some comments from some of our listeners that want to make sure we pass those along to you. But I know you have a scholarship program, and how would people apply for your scholarship program?
They would just go on theheronproject.org. If they go on theheronproject.org, they can fill out the scholarship form. You know, unfortunately, there's, you know, I would say most can't afford treatment, so we can't help everybody. Mm-hmm. Hopefully someday we will be able to, and that's my mission, you know, in this. Mm-hmm. If they go online and apply, you know, I've been very blessed to work with treatment centers like CRC, mm-hmm. And Gosnold on Cape Cod, as well as Daytop, who are willing to intervene on behalf of my foundation to get people into treatment at a very low cost through the foundation. So if they apply online, it will come through and we will review it and we'll do our best to get back to them.
That's great. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining us for the few minutes that you had for our show, Answers for the Family. And please keep up your great work. And if any of our listeners want more information, again, you could go to www.theheronproject.com. That's TheHeronProject.com. And they can also go to www.ahoopdream.com to learn more information about what you're doing. And thank you so much, Chris. And best wishes to you and your family. And real quick, how many children do you have right now?
I have four beautiful kids, and you know, who are reaping the rewards and benefits of recovery. You know, it's the greatest gift I've been given in this is watching my family recover with me.
Right, that's terrific.
You know, I recovered. I'm in recovery, and it's one day at a time, and that's how we live as a family.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, my children also have nearly 5 years of sobriety with me, and that's the beauty of it. You know, and that's unfortunately the sad reality is that, you know, people step over addicts every day. You know, they step over them, they look at them, poor things, waste. And, you know, if you don't care about the addict, care about the loved ones who are home worrying about them. Mm-hmm. And the ones that will benefit from them getting help and treatment.
Yes.
Because behind every addict is a family member who's struggling just along with them. So if you don't empathize with people like me during the struggle, empathize with little Chris, Samantha, and Drew, who were at home waiting for their dad.
Yeah.
So I'm a product of treatment. I'm a product of a chance, a second chance. And I believe everyone is worth a chance. And so are my children. So thank you for having me on. Keep, you know, you're in it just like I am. And I applaud you for it. And thank you, for giving me some time on your show to share the story.
Well, thank you so much. And perhaps we can have you back again another time. I know there's a lot more to talk about your program. And I know you're a bit shy for as much public speaking as you do, but keep the Purple Project going. And any schools interested, go to the website and gather more information, or families that need a little extra help, you know, contact the Heron Project. All right. You take care, Chris, and best wishes to you.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And we'll be back with more Answers for the Family. We have another guest coming up in just a few moments. Please stand by for Dr. Furman.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox, and we are going ahead and giving a call to Dr. Furman. He is our next guest today, and hopefully he'll be answering in just a moment here. As according to the new Centers of Disease Control, estimates that nearly 26 million Americans have diabetes today. And Dr.
Hi.
Furman, hi.
Children.
Hi, this is Dr. Melody Fox with Answers for the Family. I was just explaining real quick while we were dialing you that nearly 26 million Americans have diabetes today, and as many as 80 million qualify as having pre-diabetes. And these are really staggering numbers, and I heard they've just tripled over the last three decades. And if the trend continues, 1 in 3 American adults could have diabetes by 2050, and that is just around the corner. That just amazes me.
Yeah, it's right. So the obesity epidemic is just exploding, and the resultant diabetes and heart disease risk and increasing risk of cancer, everything associated with it.
And that's why I think it's so important. You came out with this book, and welcome, by the way. We're talking to Joel Fuhrman. He's a medical doctor. He's written several books, and his latest book is The End of Diabetes, The Eat to Live Plan to Prevent and Reverse Diabetes. And, you know, I hear about diabetes everywhere, and I was just curious, is it passed down generation to generation, or do you think it's more environmental on the way families eat?
Well, of course, it's a, you know, we're talking today about, right now, about type 2 diabetes or adult onset, which is a little different from type 1. Type 1 has different influences. It's usually called juvenile or childhood onset. It happens earlier in life. But the type 2 diabetes we're talking about occurs predominantly in overweight people. 95% of people who develop diabetes is because they're overweight, and fat on the body blocks insulin uptake. So the pancreas is then forced to secrete heightened amounts of insulin to accommodate the body's needs, because your needs increase as you gain weight. So it's the inevitable byproduct of our growing waistlines in America of the way we eat. Mm-hmm. So there are no, you know, so there are no wild animals with diabetes in the woods, and diabetes didn't occur in regular people for thousands of years and thousands of years until we had agriculture and, you know, modern farming methods where people can eat processed foods, flours, sugars, oils, where we could concentrate calories and become overweight, which was impossible in natural foods. So it's not a genetic disease. It's, you know, we all inherit some genetic tendencies, but nutrition is the point here, is that nutrition overwhelms genetics. And with the right nutrition, genetics really doesn't really matter. And I'm making this radical claim here, and I'm saying that you don't have to have heart attacks, you don't have to have strokes, you don't have to have high blood pressure, and you don't have to have diabetes, that with the right type of nutrition, these diseases can not only be prevented, but they can also be reversed.
Right. Now, you had mentioned that there's a difference between diabetes 1 and diabetes 2, and that's juvenile diabetes. When is it considered adult diabetes? Are you 16, 18, 25, 60, or at what age does it switch over, the difference? I've always been confused about that.
It's not really, that's why the terminology became type 1 and type 2. They no longer call it juvenile and adult onset anymore, because a person could develop, you know, because now, you know, when people are eating fast foods and processed foods, with so much of the American diet became processed, we're seeing obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes in children due to their weight and bad diets. But that's type 2 diabetes. So it can be, you can have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old develop type 2 adult onset diabetes because they're drinking soda and going to fast food restaurants and gaining weight and becoming overweight, and they're developing adult onset or type 2 diabetes. Whereas a person could be 22 years old and develop type 1 because it's an autoimmune attack on the pancreas that destroys the beta cells. It's not due to becoming overweight and, let's say, eating high fat, you know, eating fattening foods like type 2 is. So it's really not an age thing, but it just so happens that the type 1 afflicts people that are young, usually around the age of 5 to 10, and the adult onset usually starts in people's 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Hmm. Okay, so we could be talking to a lot of parents, and they're raising their children with that fast food diet, and by the time they're 30 or 40, they may go on into that diabetes category. Now,
exactly, and don't forget the diet, the American diet, which the parent eats when they're pregnant, before they conceive, and when and how they feed the infant, not breastfeeding the infant. In other words, the American diet is also a cause of type 1 diabetes. It's just not manifest by the diet the child is fed. It's manifest by a genetic influence, viral effect, by a viral attack on the beta cells, in conjunction with nutritional factors that can be influenced by epigenetic changes mm-hmm. in the mother's poor diet during pregnancy. So, and even a person who has type 1, by the way, you know, because we're saying type 1, the people are not going to get rid of type 1, but type 1 diabetes is a death sentence. In other words, people with higher risk of heart attack, higher risk of blindness, kidney failure, strokes, and with the type of nutritional improvements that I'm talking about in the book, The End of Diabetes, it's going to enable a type 1 to live a normal life, have a normal lifespan, not have heart attacks and these potential tragedies in their future, from the mix of the American, from the conventional diabetologist and physician's way of treating type 1s in conjunction with the standard diet recommended to type 1 requires them to have too much insulin, which accelerates their demise, and I'm giving them a, so even though they're not getting rid of it, I'm giving them a plan that's going to help them tremendously.
Yeah, we had a listener comment come in and under our questions. The comment's answer, it says, I have several friends with teens who have type 2 diabetes, and they tell me it's extremely hard to treat with diet. Can you address the problem that appears to be growing rapidly? And I'm not a doctor, medical doctor, but to me it just seems like, well, try to tell, you could feed them all the good stuff you want at home, but teens are teens. They're going to go out with their friends and eat what they want.
Well, you know, that's people, that just shows you how profoundly misinformed and uneducated people are. Because, you know, I speak to elementary schools and high schools, and, you know, when you give kids information, and you show them that people, you know, you could show them, let's say, for example, you know, black lungs and people having lung cancer and heart attacks from smoking cigarettes. But when you show them that eating fast food and soda and eating, you know, donuts and crackers and cookies and breakfast bars, when you show them that these foods are the leading cause of cancer in America, how they cause diabetes, which cause limb amputations and kidney failure and blindness and strokes in hospitals, stroke people have what they look like after a stroke, when you show them the growing occurrence of strokes in teenagers and young adults, putting them in paralyzed states in nursing homes, when you discuss the actual statistics and show them the damage that our present dietary practices really can really cause. By the way, it causes acne, takes away their, they don't look nice anymore. Kids want to look good, they want to feel good. They don't want to get sick and get and want to have horrible things happen to them that maybe happened to their parents. Mm-hmm. They don't want to have people be on medications the rest of their life. When they're given the right information, and you also show them how delicious healthy food can taste, they jump on board. It's usually the parents that are have more serious addictions that are more opposing it. The children are usually the ones fighting the parents to eat. They're the ones who like telling the parents they've got to get off the cigarettes, telling the parents they have to get off the junk food, mm-hmm. telling the parents they have to. So I think that's, parents have a difficulty because they don't walk the walk. They don't have the information. And we're a little bit, we're so conventional that it's still a little bit too, like, socially new to really discuss how deadly the American diet really is. And when people know this, you'd be amazed at the amount of people. And an army of people are making changes right now. I'm seeing this grow tremendously as people choose to have a better, happier, more pleasurable, and longer life through good nutrition.
Well, you know, it's really alarming the number of people who are unaware that they are diabetic or are in a pre-diabetic state that might lead to diabetes. And I know I have clients that have family members that are in such denial of their pre-diabetic state, and they're given medication and they're not taking their medication, they're not eating right. And I know one of the first chapters of your book is Don't Medicate, Eradicate, and you really break down things on, you know, normal glucose and restricted glucose uptake and body fat and everything else you describe in there, which is really what I like about your book. It's really step by step and explaining it. What it is.
Thank you. Well, yeah, because, you know, it's amazing. That's what I'm saying, is that information is motivational. And you know, people, you know, they're thinking they're going to diet, eat less, exercise more. And that way of thinking got us into the problem we're in. It's like, people think they failed and they can't do it, and they throw in the towel, they check out, they give up. And they don't realize that the information failed them. And it's not about eating less food. It's about eating more. It's that their bodies are nutritionally deficient, and that the right quality of food restricts fat storage in the body. So I really have to educate them, giving them all the information and the tools they need to be successful this time. You know, show them that this can taste delicious. Show them you're not about counting calories and going out starving and eating thimble-sized portions of food. Mm-hmm. How to get rid of their cravings and food addictions and binges. You know, once you give people the right type of information in a comprehensive fashion, they can succeed. And they can really succeed. And of course, you know, the information like the ACCORD study, which demonstrates that as people in the intervention group got better medical care, more glucose monitoring with their finger sticks, more drugs to keep their glucose better controlled, it increased their mortality and morbidity. Mm-hmm. That means they were dying faster, and they would die. That the more medical care and more drugs isn't the answer, because the drugs most often cause weight gain. Or most of the drugs cause weight gain. They cause the failing beta cells in the pancreas to work harder, And it makes your diabetes advance to a more advanced form more rapidly, mm-hmm. the more you're controlling, you're over-controlling your glucose. What I'm saying, so the government had to step in and stop the Accord trial because they had 28% increased deaths in the people getting better and more medical care.
Mm-hmm.
The point I'm making is that there's no, this is not about getting more care and taking more drugs. This is about taking charge of your own health. And there's no other way to do it than eating, than changing the way you eat, because the American diet is just a deadly, it's a deadly way to eat.
Mm-hmm.
We have to change the way we eat. We have to have a whole new concept of what constitutes a healthy diet, so people are in control and they don't need medications. They get their glucose. If they are diabetic, the doctor can be utilized to reduce their medications gradually over a few months until there are no medications and they're free. And that's how we know that they're well. When I tell a person, you know, you don't have to have a risk of heart attack and stroke. You don't have to be demented. But you achieve that by, the only way you can achieve that by achieving a normal blood pressure without blood pressure medications, a normal cholesterol without cholesterol-lowering drugs, a normal blood glucose parameters without drugs. The whole key is to earn it so you don't need the drugs. That's the way you're truly protected.
You know, I never knew high blood pressure was associated with diabetes.
Well, you know, the triad here, you know, it's associated because the American lifestyle, which causes you to gain weight, causes you to raise your glucose, raise your cholesterol, raise your triglycerides, and raise your blood pressure simultaneously, because those are the signs of, you know, of the signs of heart disease risk.
Mm-hmm.
So as you gain more weight, and as your blood vessels become more stiffened, your blood pressure rises, and as you get more fat on your body, your blood pressure rises. You know, so yes, all those things are intertwined. So my book, The End of Diabetes, is the most aggressive, and it's the ideal way a person can modify those risks naturally in their own kitchen. Lower their blood pressure, lower their cholesterol, lower their glucose levels, and get well again without the need for medications. That's, of course, the point.
And you definitely talk about your own kitchen. You've got some beautiful recipes towards the end of your book, by the way. There's so many that look so good. I was looking it over this weekend going, oh, I want to make that. I want to make this. So it sounds like you're a bit of a cook as well.
You know, well, I've been doing this for 25 years, but yes, I've developed, you know, a way to make healthy foods. You know, people don't know how to cook. They just, you know, throw a piece of chicken in the broiler and take some potato and put some butter on it or something. You know, so when we're talking here about making, you know, green dishes with greens and beans and onions and mushrooms and berries and seeds and all kinds of, you know, really healthy foods, you got to show people how to make ice creams and desserts and soups and stews and burgers and everything else that tastes, you know, that tastes at least as good as what they're eating right now, so they don't feel mm-hmm. they're deprived at all. And I find that to be extremely fun and exciting. I can have a party over my house. I can invite or I can go to a party and bring a dish, or I can have, you know, I can show them that, wow, this is like going to a 5-star restaurant. This is gourmet stuff, and it's healthy for you too.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you those mango ice cream made, you know, with frozen mango and coconut and lemon, and, you know, I can give you some of the, you know, I can even give you a, you know, a chocolate cake made with zucchini and beets and a little bit of whole wheat flour with beans in there with, you know, with a little cocoa powder. And, you know, in other words, we'll make you all kinds of stuff that you would never think of putting into a dish. But when you taste it, it says, wow, this is, like, fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot better than telling somebody, just eat more broccoli, eat more cauliflower, eat more, you know. You make it tasty and inviting and wanting to be part
right.
of this. Now, what are the top five what you call superfoods that could prevent you from developing diabetes in the first place?
Well, you know, the best food, you know, we're talking here about, you know, the healthiest foods in the world, but that's the whole point, is that the same foods that protect you against heart disease and dementia and against diabetes also protect you against cancer. It's not like one food for diabetes, another food for cancer. It's the body, the healthiest foods are the healthiest foods, and they keep you slim. They have angiogenesis inhibitors, which mean that they don't allow fat to be stored in the body. That's why it's not calories in, just about lowering calories. Because when you eat G-bombs, G-B-O-M-B-S, which stands for greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, berries, and seeds. Seeds like chia seeds, flax seeds, hemp seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds. When you eat beans and seeds, beans and onions, beans and mushrooms, greens and beans, when you eat these foods, they prevent fat storage in the body. Like when the angiogenesis inhibitors in the foods don't allow new blood vessels to expand and grow and fuel the fat to allow it to grow.
Mm-hmm.
It says, no way, Jose, you're not putting fat on my body. Well, you do the opposite. When you eat things like, you know, donuts, and especially when you, you know, mix things that promote insulin with oil, you know, with sugar and oil together, it raises your glucose, and the oil facilitates angiogenesis, promoting it. Actually, is absorbed so rapidly into the body that your body can't store it as burn it for energy. It has to store it as fat. And with the insulin and insulin-like growth factor 1, all these things promote angiogenesis, promote fats and fat storage. So in other words, I'm saying some calories promote fat storage, and some type of calories interfere with fat storage. So on the left, we have Mary there, who's been eating 1,800 calories a day and weighs 180 pounds. And on the right, we have Sally, who's eating 2,000 calories a day, more calories, and only weighs 120 pounds. Did you follow what I just said? What I'm saying
here?
I'm saying more calories, less body weight because of the food she's choosing to put in her body.
Okay. So you don't have to starve yourself to eat right.
Right. You have to eat the right foods to eat right.
Okay. So
more of the right foods. That's right. More of the right foods and nice-sized portions of the right foods, which because of the volume of the food and the fiber, it makes you feel full.
Right. Now, I know some of the problems with diabetes, like you had mentioned earlier, maybe going blind, and then you could have problems with your feet. I know a lot of podiatrists that see a lot of diabetic patients. Some people even lose their feet. But there's another thing that affects marriages, too, and that's like erectile dysfunction that could happen with it as well. So, you know, how does that all work together? Could you explain the issue of the nervous system disease and the majority of diabetics, you know, develop nervous system impairments? And could you discuss that a little bit?
Well, yeah, sure. It's the high level of circulating glucose in the bloodstream is a neurotoxin and ages the nerves. And the most nerves that are most vulnerable are the longest nerves, which go to the feet and legs. So that's where you feel nerve problems first, is in your feet, because the nerves are farthest away from the spine, more likely to be damaged. And, of course, you have nerves that affect your sexual organs, and you have atherosclerosis, which means you have hardening of the arteries and poor circulation, which accelerates in diabetics as well. So the combination between poor oxygenation of tissues, you know, high blood pressure, atherosclerosis, poor oxygen, you know, the lack of blood flow to the area, as well as the increasing level of nerve damage, lets a person, you know, so the erectile dysfunction occurs in people as a early sign of heart disease, and even back pain, even drying out your discs, even osteoarthritis occurs because of lack of blood flow and nutrition, and, you know, and increases in people who have poor nutrition, and as a precursor, let's say, to heart disease as well. Mm. You don't have you know, you can start to get these problems, but then you have a heart attack.
Mm.
And for many people, there about 40% of heart attacks occur in people with no signs or signals that they're going to have a heart attack. Their first symptom is the heart attack. And half the people who have heart attacks don't make it to the hospital alive. They're dead on the spot with their heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the house I'm living in right now, the person who built this house had a woman had a heart attack at age 38 and died in the driveway.
Wow.
And a woman across the street from where I live was in her 30s, had a heart attack. She didn't die. She lived, but she had a heart attack. And then, you know, the point is that it's like, it's socially and age and economically agnostic. In other words, no, it happens to all ages, and people, you know, we're getting children who are having strokes,
mm-hmm.
we're getting younger people with diabetes. We have to wake, as Americans, we have to change. We have to wake up and recognize that the way we've been eating, the condoning of fast food and donuts and junk food and soda is just, it's ruining the fabric of our country. Bringing, you know, donuts and junk food to kids' soccer games and baseball games and birthday parties and Halloween and all the stuff people are eating all the time,
mm-hmm.
they don't recognize that this is going to cause their child to have prostate cancer down the road or diabetes, and we're training people to become addicted to these foods because these foods are hard to stop once because they take over they have all types of addictive, addictive properties.
Right. You get used to the flavors, and you do eventually want your ding-dongs. The only way not to get it is to have the company go out of business.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, I mean, you are such an expert on this, and what I really like is throughout your whole book, you really base it on advanced nutritional scientific research. You know, it's not just like a willy-nilly book that just says, well, eat this way and you'll do better. You really get down to the brass tacks and explain everything step by step.
Thank you. You know, I do. I go to these health conferences and I hear people speak who write books, and they just say anything and make all kinds of claims. And you're wondering, how do people know who to believe? You know, is it, you know, who speaks the loudest? Is the funniest? I mean, it's like, it's crazy, you know. But that's what I... obviously take a lot of care to document what I'm saying here and to make sure it's well supported by the scientific literature as well as my 25 years of clinical experience in applying it. And but in any case, they're heavily referenced, and that's why a lot of physicians and doctors are utilizing them in their practice. And the results, of course, speak for themselves, which make the doctors feel good because, you know, you'd be surprised how many physicians are now, you know, writing me and how many people are writing me and saying they were recommended by the physician, you know, to buy this. Because think of the frustration most medical doctors have. They don't want to see their patients get sicker and sicker. They're losing their enjoyment of their career when they're chronically seeing people get heavier and more medication and more medication. They want to see their health having a positive effect on people and watching people get well. Mm-hmm. And it's revitalized a lot of their enjoyment of their job to be able to offer them and talk to their patients about nutrition and about motivating them to get in better health and having the patient come in and giving them reduced the medications. And you know, be monitoring them for medication reduction and jumping up and down. Some doctors tell me they're jumping up and down in the exam room with a patient who's off all medication now and got themselves well and lost 40, 50 pounds. That's fun to see people get well. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I do that in my own practice, not the physical wellness, but the mental health wellness. It's wonderful to watch people get healthy and make better choices for themselves on no matter what part of their body that they're improving. But I know your new book, The End of Diabetes, is a fabulous book, but I want to mention some names of your other best-selling books. You have Eat to Live, which I think everybody's heard of if you've been around, Super Immunity, The End of Diabetes, Eat for Health, Disease-Proof Your Child, Fast and Eating for Health, Nutritional Handbook. I mean, you have so many books out there, but I think everything comes together in The End of Diabetes, the Eat to Live plan to prevent and reverse diabetes in the first place.
Well, thanks so much. It's certainly the most updated and, you know, modern of my books. So, and for people who really want to get well or have some medical condition they would like to, you know, recover from, I think it'll really motivate them and push them in the right direction.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's hard to, like, learn this information. Not. It's almost like I say that if you really study this information and get it in your brain, you become a different person. You can't do what you used to do anymore. You know, you just it looks like, how could you hurt yourself like that if you know how, you know what you're doing to yourself?
Now, I'm just curious, what got you interested in the field of diabetes? I know you're a medical doctor, but did you go in to study something else first and then ended up here, or was this always a passion of yours, or you knew people who were diabetic in your life?
No, I went to medical school. You know, I had my 25th medical school reunion this year.
Congratulations.
So I graduated from medical school in 1988, and I went to medical school. You know, I graduated from college. I was an economics major. I was in the United States World Figure Skating Team.
Wow.
I was second in the United States in pair skating with my sister. So I didn't really prepare for the pre-medical career then. I was studying nutrition then as a teenager in my young 20s, and my father was quite ill and changed his diet and lost about 40 pounds. And then I started reading all kinds of nutritional books, and I realized that, you know, I was getting excited about what nutrition could do for people as opposed to taking medication. So even in my early 20s, I recognized that the population was going in the wrong direction. And I became enthusiastic about studying this field, and I decided then to go back to take the postgraduate pre-med program at Columbia because I hadn't taken the pre-med requirements in college. And then I went back to the University of Pennsylvania Medical School after attending the postgraduate pre-med program for 2 years at Columbia.
Wow.
So I went to medical school a little bit later on in life, but I did so with the intention of being a physician that's specializing in nutritional medicine. Right? So I did so right from the start. So a lot of doctors, you know, practiced for years and years and got fed up with medicine and then went back and learned this stuff, where I really started with this career in mind right from the very beginning.
Well, and also as an athlete, too, you were probably always concerned about nutrition and being the best that you could be and being good to your body. So those early lessons definitely found its way into your life.
Definitely, and right now I advise, you know, world-class amateur and professional athletes because they want to, you know, maximize their performance, and they don't want to get sick and have their, you know, tennis or down skiing, racing, or basketball, you know, whatever their career is, mm-hmm. they don't want to be faced with, you know, viruses and infections and flus that derail them for weeks, mm-hmm. taking them out of the competitive, you know, their competitive opportunities.
Absolutely.
So we show them how their immune system and their resistance to disease can go down as they flood the body with powerful micronutrients. So, yeah, I have that, I still maintain my connection with advising athletes right now, too, you know.
Oh, that's great. Now, we have a listener comment here. It says, I visited the Optimum Health Institute a few years ago after suffering a bronchial pneumonia for 2 months. I was placed on a strict vegetarian diet that included fresh juiced wheatgrass morning and night. Within 4 days, my lungs were clear. And an older gentleman with advanced diabetes was just leaving after his 2 week stay, and his doctor reported that his insulin levels were at normal for the first time in years. So I can't wait to read your book and see how your diet compares to these other experiences. You want to comment on that?
Well, he's just giving, stating support. That, in other words, he's seen this happen. But, you know, all I could say is that, number one, I've published medical studies, and I've been involved with this, with doing this for many, many years, more than 20 years. So I have literally thousands of patients who have reversed their diabetes. And, this, you know, right now, there are literally probably, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are now making changes. There's nutritarian restaurants, meetups, dinner clubs, you know, nutritarian hotel. The point is that this is a growing movement of people who want to have excellent health, and we have to put on our own oxygen mask first.
Right.
In other words, like this man just called in, we all have to get ourselves in great health so then we can radiate out, be a shining example for the rest of our communities and families, and
Absolutely.
Encourage other people to be in better health, because our whole economy, it represents a tremendous amount of human tragedy, from having so many sick people and so many medical costs. It means we'll get a lot of people having needless and painful and stressful and, you know, medical care they don't need.
Right.
And so this is a call out for everybody in America to learn to get in better health and to be examples and to feel good about it, helping other people too. We all got to change. Not just the diabetics out there. We've got to know about this. We got to understand it. We've got to motivate, encourage everybody to be healthy. It's just part, you know, so that's my
true.
My passion, you know.
Well, it definitely sounds like it. And definitely parents that are listening, and even teachers, those kids watch what you do during your breaks as well. So if we could, you know, kind of practice what we preach about eating well, then we're setting good role models for our kids to be happier and healthier throughout their entire life. And they'll be happier because they won't be bombarded with all these illnesses that they don't have to develop over time. Well, we are out of time, and we're talking to Joel Furman, medical doctor and wonderful author of many books, and his latest book is The End of Diabetes, The Eat to Live Plan to Prevent and Reverse Diabetes. So, Dr. Furman, thank you so much for being on our show today. I'm sorry we didn't have more time. Well, I'm thrilled. And if you want more information, they can go to your website, www.drfurman.com. And I hope you're with us again sometime.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. And we'll be back with more Answers for the Family next week. Please join us then. Until then, have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and guest host Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.